Welcome to the Big C podcast series, an initiative of the Algoa FM Big Walk for Cancer. I'm Caroline Kelleher. This is episode 2, our topic, lifestyle choices. And with me in the studio to discuss both nutrition and exercise is dietitian Mary Ann Victor. Morning, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
And biokineticist Chad Durham.
Morning, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so for being here. I'm looking forward to this discussion. Okay, let's start it off by, let's just define, Mary Ann, for our viewers and our listeners, what does a dietitian do? What is a dietitian?
Great. So, Carol Ann, a dietitian is actually a medical practitioner in the field of food and nutrition. We would use evidence-based research to help our patients attain and maintain a healthy lifestyle. And we do this by taking that research and putting it into practical guidelines of what the patient should eat.
So you have, what is your bachelor? You study?
So I did a BSc in dietetics.
Okay, great. And Chad, a lot of folks still kind of go, what does a biokineticist do?
I think the biggest crossover is the biokinetics and the physiotherapy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of crossover there, and that's where we obviously need to distinguish between the two. So physiotherapy is your first phase of rehab, physical rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. So the physiotherapist do your first phase, a lot of inflammation control and pain management.
Okay.
Then we take over. So we do the second and the third phase of rehabilitation. So we take that over from a movement point of view. So I like to use the ankle as an example. So you're walking off the edge of a step and you roll your ankle. You'd see a physiotherapist initially just to control the pain, reduce the swelling, and start getting a bit of movement and mobility back. Then we would take that over and kind of do a full body assessment, not just focusing on one limb or one segment. We would go a full body assessment and saying, are you prone to that? Is it something that might happen again? And then we try to obviously work on the prevention as well. So we would then get a bit more mobility, a bit more movement, but then strengthen and stabilize everything in that ankle, but then including the knee and the hip to prevent something like that happening again. And obviously that's just a very basic, summary, but that can go into a whole bunch of other things. We also, I think what a lot of people don't know about biokinetics is we also involved with our chronic disease management, and that's where we come in today with from a cancer point of view.
Okay.
Is our chronic patients, which everybody thinks that biokinetics is just the sports and exercise, but it's obviously the chronic disease management which is important.
Because somebody who hasn't been injured, I know I went for a health assessment for my medical aid to see a biokineticist. So you also, even if you're not injured, you can go and see a biokineticist, can't you?
100%. So a lot of that would be obviously decreasing and reducing risk of further conditions. So high blood pressure, obesity, obviously cancer benefits.
Yes.
Neurological rehab and our cardiac rehab, which is really interesting. That's my passion, is the chronic disease management.
Okay, that's one. Well, we are going to chat a lot about that. Okay, Mary Ann, eating. It's an emotional issue because it involves such an intricate mixture of, we've got the psychological element, we've got the cultural element, aesthetically, what does the food look like? It's kind of a minefield. So explain to us what the correct nutrition can do for somebody who's been given a cancer diagnosis.
Okay, so Carol Ann, yes, as you mentioned, I think food is so important for so many elements. And when we're looking at it, we got to actually divide it into three different stages. And we got to say we've got pre-diagnosis, we've got treatment, and then we've got long-term. And at each stage, our focus would actually be completely different. So if we're looking pre-diagnosis, we know that obesity is linked or increases the risk to 13 different types of cancers. So healthy nutrition is really so important to prevent the cancer and to prevent the inflammation as well as so many other chronic diseases. And when we get to pre-diagnosis, that means healthy eating, basic healthy eating with all our food groups. Then if we go and look at your active treatment, remember, nutrition is not meant to be a cure for cancer at this stage. We are rather aiding in supporting the treatment and giving you a better quality of life. The big focus here for us would be body composition. So we need to prevent too much muscle loss, and we need to give you the foods that are going to help you fight the inflammation, as well as help you with the changes that happen. So often during treatment, we have a lot of side effects, taste changes, inability to eat, weight loss, constipation, diarrhea, reflux, and it would be the dietitian's job to help you manage these stages to enable you to get the correct nutrients in that your body needs. Mm-hmm. And then post-treatment, again, we need to focus on body composition. We need to say, right, what muscle have you lost? How are we going to help you to eat to get that muscle back? We need to help you to maintain a healthy, balanced life. And there's a new normal after diagnosis and after treatment. And we need to give you the best quality of life and teach you how to cope with this new normal. So definitely, throughout all the stages, dietitian is so vitally important, and the correct nutrition.
Okay, so if I have been eating healthily, and Chad, if I've been exercising prior to a cancer diagnosis, are my chances of recovery, of survival, surely they must go up?
Yeah, I think I'll jump in there. So purely from an exercise point of view, there's very similar to what Marianne mentioned, is just that pre sort of diagnosis stage. Exercise helps in many ways with the cancer. So the one of the most important things is hormone regulation. Mm-hmm. So insulin, obviously, preventing or reducing insulin resistance, which has a lot to do with the nutrition part of you. So those are very, very much hand in hand, which is really interesting. And also estrogen. Obviously, we get the regulation of estrogen levels, yeah, which obviously reducing our risk of breast cancer, for example. Another important is inflammation control. So a lot of people think that exercise increases inflammation, but that's actually incorrect. The inflammation is controlled with exercise by obviously cell signals, etc., in the muscles. A very interesting thing that happens with strength training or resistance training, with exercise, is the myokines that are released. So the myokines that are released are like little proteins that get released from exercise, and those regulate a lot of signals within the body and actually slow down the cell proliferation and sort of reduce the tumor environments and that sort of ideal tumor sort of aggregating environment. So it reduces all of that and actually makes the cancer cells unhappy or not enjoying that environment.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And obviously stimulating DNA repair. So the exercise does increase DNA repair, which is important for us. Obviously, we know that that's what the carcinogen is doing in that at a cellular level.
If I can jump in there. I think if we had to summarize that as well, something that's so important is cancer is an inflammatory condition.
Yes.
So during inflammation, you have a lot of catabolism. So that means muscle loss. So the more you're exercising, the more you're actually helping prevent too much muscle loss.
Yeah.
So it is vitally important on, you know, all grounds.
Okay, so let's talk now about somebody who is not eating well, who is not exercising, because we want to convince those people that, you know what, you have to get off the couch, you have to start reading labels, and you have to start being aware of what you are putting into your body, because there's a whole new school of thought that let food be your medicine. So what would you advise somebody? They come along, so we can say obesity, that has an impact upon cancer, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So what are we doing, Marianne? A patient comes along, they are obese, and now you need to help them.
So basically what we're going to do is the first thing we're going to tackle is healthy eating. We got to explain to them what all the risks are of obesity. I mean, cancer being one of the many, there are so many different conditions linked to obesity. So we're going to have to explain the importance of healthy eating and getting that weight down. And when we talk about weight, it's mainly body composition. We want to drop the fat and increase the muscle. Mm-hmm. So we have to go back to basics. We need to look at our fruit and veggies. We need to look at eating adequate amount of proteins. We need to eat the right kinds of fats. And then we want to reduce all those ultra-processed foods. We want to take away the alcohol or limit the alcohol. We want to make sure that if they're smoking, we got to address that. We got to address all mm-hmm. these factors that are directly influencing mm-hmm. their overall health.
So we can say, okay, so obesity, it's a big, big no-no when it comes to cancer. Yes. Smoking, we know. We've all read it. It's proven that it's a carcinogen. It causes yes. cancer. So you have to try and stop smoking. And then I think only recently there was research that was done to prove that exercise is so vitally important when it comes to, if you are given a cancer diagnosis, that your survival is just going to shoot up if you have been exercising. So then we need to look at the exercise element. People are so resistant, Mary. We live in a world where food, we are bombarded. Advertisements, eat this, mm-hmm. and if you were to go into a grocery store and you said, okay, let us remove all the processed food, the ultra-processed mm-hmm. food from the shelves, mm-hmm. there would be very, very little left.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that is pretty scary. So then as I said in the beginning, culturally as well, no, but on a Sunday, we have a roast, mm-hmm. and then it's this, and then it's that, and then it's a pudding with this, and then it's pudding with that, and to it must be quite difficult to change people's mindsets.
Yes, no, it really is. And I think this is where that psychological factor comes in. And we need to remember that we're humans. We don't like change. So we got to work slowly. And we got to start with what's within your control. Start with small changes. Mm-hmm. Don't try to change everything at once, because then we tend to rebel. Start with something small. So also focus, instead of saying take out, see what we can add. So say, well, let's try add some vegetables to that plate. What vegetables do you like? All veggies are good, so give them a choice. Instead of saying, you have to eat broccoli, say, choose a vegetable that you like.
I'm smiling because I love broccoli. I can eat a hedge of broccoli.
Yeah, so we really want to look at it slowly and progressively. And then we can say, right, let's start with changing the way you cook the food. You know, if we can take out all the extra sauces, we don't need to fry the food, maybe grill the food. Those little changes will make a big difference. Mm.
Can we talk sugar? Yeah. We have demonized sugar, and I've even had friends tell me a relative has had cancer and they decided to cut sugar out completely. They are only eating fruit and the cancer's gone. Is it a myth? Is there truth to it? This whole cancer. I remember actually saying to my cousin who had had a melanoma and had it removed and the cancer had migrated, but I said to him, you mustn't eat sugar. Cancer feeds on sugar. And we live in a world where there's information overload and we get bits of information from here, bits here. And we tend to take what's on TikTok, what's on the internet. No, it must be true.
Yes.
So please educate us.
Okay, so I think this is a multi-layered kind of question.
Okay.
But sugar doesn't directly cause cancer, okay? But indirectly, it does affect it. So if we have a look, sugar is an empty calorie, first of all, meaning it's got no nutritional value, okay? It's just got energy, hasn't got vitamins, anything like mm-hmm. that. And often, if we're eating a diet high in sugar, it means we're replacing healthy food. We're not eating our fruits and veggies. We're not getting our fiber in. So those patients are then higher risk of obesity, which puts you higher risk of cancer. Mm-hmm. So that's one side. The other side is cancer is an inflammatory condition, and sugar increases inflammation.
Right. So we want to eat foods that are
anti-inflammatory. So while sugar doesn't cause cancer, if you are already diagnosed with cancer, sugar can definitely worsen that environment.
Okay. Okay, great. Chad, exercise and healthy eating, they go hand in hand. You can't have one with... And we also know that a sedentary lifestyle is one of the worst things. Can you just explain how would somebody who has been a couch potato all their life and they've now been given a cancer diagnosis, and Marianne's going to help them to eat properly, to get that side of things right, and they come along to you and they need to move their body.
Yeah, so I think just touching on what Marianne mentioned about the sugar, obviously from an exercise point of view, the benefits from the cancer side is decreasing the insulin sensitivity and in the inflammation side. So both those are the major impacts of exercise, with linking it with the dietary changes, is we decreasing the insulin sensitivity and then we decreasing the inflammation. So that's obviously reducing that environment that, yes, we spoke about, that cancer stimulating environment that we spoke about with the sugar that aids to that. So that's probably the biggest thing with the exercise. And there's obviously other important things as well. The body was never meant to sit.
No.
We were never meant to sit for so long.
Mm.
I see most of my patients, the biggest issue, we see a lot of back pain, we see a lot of immobility and the sedentary laughter. We were never meant to sit as long as we do. Muscles that go inactive from sitting,
yes,
is
atrophy.
The glutes and the hamstrings, mm, are actually so important, and they're supposed to do so much more work for us, mm, but we are so sedentary and we sit on our bums the whole time that they do no work for us. And that's where a lot of our back issues and our knee issues come, mm, from, because you've got areas that are doing too much work and areas that are doing too little work. Mm. The same thing from a metabolic point of view is our metabolic rates are changing, and we're sitting for long periods of time. We don't get those changes, those positive changes we spoke about with exercise, and that causes this cascade of events from a cancer point of view, and just creating an environment where those cancer cells just proliferate, which is not ideal.
How do you inspire someone? Because is there a lazy gene? Because you get some people who are, they just don't want to exercise. Yeah. And then you seem to get another group who love exercising. And then you get the group that, they ate healthily, they lost weight, they were exercising, and then they just fall off the wagon and the weight goes back on, they stop exercising. We also live in a world that we are all so busy. Mm-hmm. And then, as we were chatting about prior to this chat, a child comes along, and when you were young, you got up, you went to gym. In the evening, you went to gym, after work. But how do you fit it all in?
I think that's an interesting topic, and it's something most of us go through, or a lot of people will go through, is that change in lifestyle when we spoke about seasons. So everything happens, we're in certain seasons of our life, and those change. And those changes can cause major sort of effects from a health point of view. So it's easy to go to gym when we're young and there's no kids at home and work's not so busy, but then everything catches up a little bit and then we become a bit more sedentary and everything becomes about convenience. So it's convenience eating and it's obviously lack of activity, and those two together start this cascade of obviously inactivity, mm-hmm, and the sedentary lifestyle. What I would recommend is start simple. Start simple. Keep it really basic. We always try to get this. It comes around to sort of the end of December into Jan, and we think, New Year's resolution.
Beach body, speedo body.
We're going to get into the gym, and people start we think too big. So just keep it simple. Start by increasing the walking. You got dogs at home. Take the dogs for a walk. Increase that sort of playing with the kids outside, just getting outside,
moving
our bodies. Just basic movement is the most important thing. That's the easy thing to start. Then we can look at getting into more of a resistance training routine. So getting into the gym, something like an aerobics class or a Pilates class, and then progressing to obviously being active on weekends. Mm. So playing paddle's a big thing now that we see a lot of people getting into.
It's also expensive, Jack. bad.
It's really expensive. And it's what's interesting about that, we're seeing a lot of injuries from paddle.
Oh, yeah.
People just rock up, they don't warm up, and they just go straight into the paddle. So it's great for business. But yeah, but there's a lot of things we can do that will obviously increase that activity. If you look at from a generalized sort of cancer point of view, the minimum requirements for exercise, we normally look at vigorous exercise 75 to 150 minutes a week.
Okay.
So that's actually not that much.
No.
If you look at that as a whole, 150 minutes a week of vigorous exercise. Vigorous exercise being...
getting your heart rate up.
Yes, 100%. So that's spiking that heart rate. So that's a bit more of like running, aerobics, joining a class. That's something that takes a bit more effort, but that's not that much time. Another minimum requirement is 150 to 300 minutes of moderate to low exercise. And that's something that's very attainable. That's something that we can all do. Something that's easy is most of us have fitness watches now. So again, the steps, the 10,000 steps, 12,000 steps, that's something that we can all achieve, which is very attainable, which just gets the body moving, which is important.
And also bite-sized exercises, because they say now you don't have to, the mentality of an hour in the gym.
Yeah.
No, if you've got 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Do 20 minutes.
100%.
When I'm standing waiting for my coffee in the morning, I do these some Pilates exercises while I'm waiting for my coffee. And I think it's also important in terms of a cancer patient or somebody recovering. In days of old, oh, don't move. You need your rest. You need to don't move. Now, no. Get up as soon as you can and start moving. Moving that body.
And I think that's also where I'm going to chip in and say, you know, a lot of my patients, I can't even think of telling them to take their dogs for a walk. Mm. That's just not going to happen. So I say to them, park a little bit further and walk into the shop.
Yes.
Carry your parcels. Don't push them in a trolley. You know, it sounds stupid, but it all helps. Every time you go to the toilet, stand up and down on the toilet seat 5 times. You've done 5 little squats. You know, if you're making your coffee, because people don't forget to drink coffee, go up and down on your toes. You know, do a few little calf raises. Mm-hmm. Stack those exercises. Incorporate them into your everyday activities. And once they do that and they realize, hold on, this isn't so bad, then we can start thinking, let's go beyond the front gate.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, it's very overwhelming, especially when we get our obese patients. You know, some of them have never exercised in their lives. So now to tell them to go for a walk or go to the gym, it's just too much for them to handle.
Mm. Getting back to the food, we talked about inflammatory food as opposed to anti. Can you give us a list, some of the foods that we should be eating?
Great. So we definitely want to focus on fiber. Fiber being our whole wheat products. We want to eat those. We want to eat lots of fruit and veggies. So when we look at our basic groceries that we go and buy, instead of buying white rice, buy your brown rice, buy your bulgur wheat. Have a look at that. When you're planning your meals, make sure there are enough vegetables on that plate. Then we're getting your fiber and we're getting your anti-inflammatory properties. When we're looking at types of food, eat the rainbow. We want as many different colors as we can get. We do get our foods like your berries, which are maybe a little bit more anti-inflammatory, but all fruit is good for us. So we want to eat fruit, obviously in moderation, with the skins or peels on where we can. We want to eat our veggies. We want to eat our good carbs. What we want to avoid are those processed foods, those convenience foods, the foods that are cooked in fats and oils, the fried foods. You know, we want to avoid too many of the instant foods in terms of packet sauces, ready-made cook-in sauces. We want to avoid those. Too many of the high preservative foods, your cookies and baked foods. We want to avoid those sort of things, which are really our trans fats, our bad fats. We don't want to eat those.
Is it true that sugar is addictive? And you know, you hear people say, I opened the box of biscuits and before I knew it, I'd finished the whole box.
Absolutely. And I think from many different levels. Yes. Yeah, so I think what happens is obviously the sugar gives you that, those endorphins just rush.
Yeah.
And the more you have, the more you want.
Yeah.
We've got the psychological thing where, you know, through the years, we teach ourselves that sugar makes us feel better. because it gives you this quick rush, then you get that drop and then you want more. And the more you have, the more you want. And unfortunately, they make it taste nice with sugar as well.
They actually put things in the food. Yes. There's a fascinating book, and you should read it. It's by a Dr. Mark Hyman called The Food Fix. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the food industry in America, but how, you know, big food controls everything, yeah. How we are at the mercy of so many different political, it's just a minefield. But in the Food Fix, it talks about the fact that food is made to be addictive.
Mm. Absolutely.
And if we start reading, I love reading labels. You'll see me in the aisle and my eyes on them. We need to get used to reading labels. What are we putting into our bodies? Yes. So that gets me to, are there additives? You know, we had the whole artificial sweetness scare, saccharin. It's so difficult for us as consumers because there is so much information and so much misinformation. Where do we go where do we go?
So I must say, I really like the South Africa Cancer Association. They've got lovely infographics on their website.
Okay.
They have so much information that's really in an easy-to-read kind of format that we can go to answer some of these questions. And it's available to everyone out there. You don't sort of need special, you know, subscriptions to get there. So I'm really going to encourage people to go and look at that website. Because, you know, we know that there is so much on the internet. We can't trust everything we read.
No,
but
we shouldn't.
They've got well-researched articles on there that I would definitely recommend you have a look at.
Okay. And I also wanted to ask you about this whole trend of autophagy, fasting, and what it can do for the body. Are you a believer in fasting? It kind of makes sense to me that If I think about the stuff we put into our bodies, the kind of rubbish that we can put into our bodies, and they say you should actually cook your food from scratch, buy that fresh cauliflower, don't buy the pre-mix and what have you, that to give the digestive system a rest, for me it makes sense, but is it?
So I think there's a lot of angles we can look at this question from, and we first need to define what is fasting. I mean, we get different kinds of fasts. We get an 18-hour fast. We get a 3-day fast. You know, we get fasts where patients would just eat vegetables and fruit, but maybe not meat. So there are a lot of different types of fasting. I think more importantly than the fasting, we need to look at what are you eating when you're eating. It doesn't help not to eat for 8 hours and then suddenly eat the biggest load of rubbish in the rest of the hour.
Yes.
So for me, that's more the angle that I would look at when I'm looking at the way we want to distribute your food, is when you are eating, what are you eating?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Chad, a trend in the exercise world is I've been seeing people rebounding, jumping up and down on mini trampolines. And I saw a couple of weeks ago, approved by the Cancer Association. Do I need to buy a trampoline?
Yeah, I think the rebounding is brilliant. With the rebounders specifically, what's really nice about that is it's impact, but it's low impact. So when we look at exercise benefits, obviously we got all sorts of exercises beneficial. But when we look at our high-risk categories, so when we look at osteoporosis and some of our degenerative conditions, something like the rebounding is very beneficial because it takes the load off. So we want to take load. We want to take weight-bearing load to get a lot of our benefits that we're trying to get from the exercise. But some of us are at high risk, so we can't just go for a run. Not everybody is it safe to just go for a run. So the rebounding's great because we still get that impact and we still cause that bone regrowth and get those other benefits from exercise, but it's in a safe way. We're not getting that high impact like we would with the running. So there's obviously other variations of that. So even just walking. Walking's brilliant. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to all go out and buy some trampolines.
Yes.
And start rebounding. But it is a really nice thing to add into. It's also the social aspect. A lot of these rebounders, it comes with like a rebounding class.
Yes.
And you can join with mates and actually join a class, which is really nice. But it's that impact on the muscles, on the bones, mm-hmm. that causes all the positive effects that we are looking okay. for with exercise.
I think when it comes to older persons like myself, it is true, isn't it, that it doesn't matter what age you start, muscle is muscle, and you can strengthen it, and you can, because I think also we, when people get older, they go, I don't need to exercise anymore. Mm. And that is when you should be exercising, because that's when you need to maintain that core strength so you can walk upstairs without holding onto the rail, you know, so you can go about your daily life. You don't end up being a bent up. So yes, and it, you can start at any age, can't you?
It's never too late. Never, never, never too late. I think that's the most important thing. What we see from a research point of view, atrophy, which is muscle breakdown and degradation, happens within 10 days.
Gosh.
So 10 days of being sedentary, of sitting, doing pretty much nothing, we see those changes. And then with age, every sort of 10 years after the age of 40, we see a 10% decrease in muscle mass, in muscle strength, in core control. And that's when we at obviously risk of falls, of all these obviously chronic conditions as well, starting in increasing, and the cancer risk increases. So it's never too late. We see all these positive effects with exercise at any stage of life.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, so I'll give a little fun fact here. For those of you who are wondering if you should start exercising, muscle is 3 times more metabolic active than fat. So that means the more you exercise, the more fat you burn when you're sitting doing nothing.
Yeah. Okay, great. Can we bust another myth? So many folk that I know are religiously going to the gym, and they say, I don't know why I'm not losing weight. the misconception that I can eat whatever I like as long as I'm exercising.
Yeah, I think that's something that I see a lot is you are what you eat, huh?
Yeah, and you can't out-exercise a bad diet.
100%.
Okay,
so there's so many different aspects to that that just infuriates me, and I'm sure Marianne as well, is you put in all the hard work at the gym, but then you unravel it at home. And it's not a lie when we say 70% diet in terms of weight loss changes and obviously positive effects from physical exercise. It all starts at home and it starts with the diet. We can have all these effects and these positive changes, but if you can undo it with the diet, you're just letting yourself down.
Yeah. And I think this is all so where we got to say, you know what? Exercise is almost like a celebration of what your body can do. It's not a reward, and food is not a reward for what you've exercised for. You know, we need to eat healthy to be healthy. We need to exercise to be healthy. We're not going to exercise to be able to eat. Because I think that's what a lot of people do.
And it's also a great stress reliever, and it can even mild depression. They say it's to get out there and do some exercise.
I think the biggest thing with that is the fix that we get from food, or especially sugar, we're getting that sort of hormonal fix that's ticking that box. Exercise does the same thing. So you can look at it the other way around, where instead of getting that fix from a sugar point of view, let's get that same fix and those same happy hormones from an exercise point of view. Yeah. So then we're ticking that box. But we don't want to replace one with the other.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so Marianne, final takeaways?
So, you know what? I think we live in such a fast-paced life. You know what? We have huge amounts of stress, and we're busy. We don't always have a lot of time. But we need to actually have a look and say, right, what factors are within my control? Which factors are not within my control? We all want to prevent cancer. So what can I control? I can't control my genetics. I can't, control those sort of things. But I can control what I eat and how much I eat of that. So let's start with the basic things. Let's look at what we can add. Let's look at what I can make from scratch. And we make small little goals, because these things are not going to happen overnight. If you've been eating McDonald's every day of your life for the last 20 years, it's not going to stop. Maybe say, you know what, I will make sure I eat a really nice balanced lunch and then get myself that McDonald's as a treat. And then you slowly wean off. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't expect people to make huge changes. We need to start small and think of that big picture. Think of healthy And by thinking healthy, you're automatically going to reduce so many of those risk factors. Mm-hmm.
Great. And I think exercise, it also reduces your appetite, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For me, I know if I've done, I don't want to go. And,
yeah, 100%. 100%. So it obviously increases metabolic rate and then reduces mm-hmm. that satiety that happens with exercise. It makes us feel, obviously there's that feeling of fullness. There's that reduction in the need to eat and get those cravings. It also reduces cravings. Mm-hmm. So then that obviously prevents us overeating and binging, which is fantastic. I know after heavy exercise, a lot of people just almost like don't feel like eating for a while. You give yourself a little bit of a break with that. So that's very important.
Key takeaways,
my side. I think the most important thing is if we look at exercise and the release of those myokines in the body, obviously preventing that cell growth or cancer cell growth and reducing inflammation is obviously extremely important. But again, keep it simple and start small. So start small, like we said. Just a couple of movements while we're brushing teeth, a couple of deep squats we spoke about earlier, walking a little bit more regularly, joining the kids outside and obviously playing with the dogs and those sorts of things. So keep it simple, keep it small, and then start adding on and start joining classes and keep it social. Join friends doing exercise.
Yes,
that makes it a lot easier because there's accountability. The biggest thing with exercise and with food but is the accountability. Mm-hmm. So somebody's got to hold you accountable if we can't hold ourselves accountable.
And awesome. Also, you know, I like to say we're all human. We can't be 100% good all the time. So anyone who knows me know that we need to live by the 80-20 rule. Try and be 80% good 100% of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we don't believe in 100% good, 100% bad. Mm. Get that moderation.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Marianne, Chad, thank you so much for sharing your vast knowledge and expertise with us, because it is a vital, vital part of anyone's cancer journey. And, of course, for anyone wanting to, as we know, to get a cancer diagnosis, it must be a shattering experience. But thank you.
Pleasure.
Absolutely.
So appreciate your time. Thank you so much. So in next week's episode, I am joined by clinical psychologist Dr. Tony Muller and breast cancer survivor Cherise Hart to unpack navigating the emotional and physical challenges of receiving a cancer diagnosis. The Big C podcast series is proudly brought to you by Algo FM. Till next time, take care.